Yep, I'm all good.
Okay. So I'll lead a little bit in the beginning if you're okay with that, and then we'll just let it take its natural course.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay. Okay. So your name is John, and how old are you now?
I'm 42 now.
You're 42. Okay. And you're born and raised in Australia?
I was actually born in England, but moved to Australia when I was two. Yeah. Raised in Australia.
Oh, so that's your home. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then who raised you? Who were you raised by?
My mom and dad.
And I got two younger sisters. And then my parents got divorced when I was about 12. So that was my mom from then.
Okay. And then was your dad still a part of your life, or was that?
No. I've seen him less than a handful of times since then.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. How was that for you?
Good.
it was better good. For them to be apart?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay. So you want to maybe tell the listeners about and just what made you reach out to me?
Yeah. I've been listening to all your podcasts, and I realized I had a story to tell, and that was for a few reasons. One was that other victims maybe feel comfortable to talk about it themselves, that they don't have to be quiet about it. And the other one was more for parents to be aware that this happens. It happens a lot, and different signs and things that should be looked out for.
Yeah, I love that. And I, you know, give you a lot of credit because, one, you know, as a victim, it's not easy to come out ever to anyone about your abuse.
Yeah.
And then there's even for men, it's even less likely.
Yeah.
You know, so what do you think, just from your personal perspective, why do you think it's harder for men to come out?
Definitely. Skipping forward a bit, but when I eventually went to the police about this myself, because I actually did go to the police about this in my 20s, there was about nine victims that I knew of, and only one of them had tried to go to the police themselves, but sort of pulled out halfway through, couldn't continue with it. So out of the nine victims, by 10 years after the abuse stopped, only one of us had sort of told anybody.
Do you think it had to do with, what do you think it had to do with you?
For me personally, I pushed it to the back of my head. I stopped trying to think of it. I reckon I lived from like 17 to 22, 23, not even acting as if it never happened. I just pushed it to the back of my head. I never dwelt on it.
And we're going to get into like the story format of it, but did you even know what it was to even put words on it?
Yeah, I did. I knew exactly what was wrong and how wrong everything was and what had happened.
Do you want to start out and tell us kind of how old you were and
what happened? I was 13. So my mum and dad had just been divorced or separated. I don't know if they do it. I don't know when the divorce happened, but they'd just been separated. And I remember I used to play out in the front yard, and my next door neighbor, he was a year older than me. So he would have been about 14. I was just starting year seven at high school, just starting high school, and he was a year above me. He had this male, he would have been in his early 30s, that worked in a capital city, and on a Friday would finish his job in our city.
Okay.
And he'd just be out the front yard with this other kid, and he'd be doing like martial arts and stuff like that in the front yard. So I started going over and just playing, mucking around, as you do as a kid. And I eventually, so we lived in a city, and then he also owned a caravan in the town.
Of course he did. Was it white?
Yeah.
Of course it was.
Yeah, he owned a caravan with an annex in the town, in the city where I lived. And I ended up, we started just, just playing in the front yard, doing martial arts, that sort of stuff. I remember the first time I was with him alone, we went to a car wash just to wash his car, and it was all fine. He was like the father figure. Mm-hmm. He was kind and fun, and there was nothing creepy. As a 13-year-old, there was nothing creepy about this man. Yeah.
You're 13. Yeah. Your friend's 14. This guy's in his 30s.
Yeah.
So he comes on the scene, showing you guys attention, teaching you how to protect yourself, and this very skillful art of martial arts.
Yeah.
And then he started taking you to do other things. Is that what you said?
Yeah. It was just the once. It was just once we went for a drive from my house into the city, and we went to one of them car washes. We just washed his ute. That's all it was. Then he dropped me back off at home. And everything was good. A few weeks had passed, and this sort of thing would happen I'd see him on a Friday afternoon.
Wait, hang on one sec. So the first time you went to the car wash, was it just you and him?
Yeah, that was the very first time I was ever alone with him.
And how did he kind of get that to be a possibility? Do you remember?
There was no reason for that to happen. Like, he was just, at the time, he was working at getting me comfortable with him alone.
That's right. Grooming.
Yeah, looking back. To this day, I don't see how anyone else didn't see it. Like, not us as kids, but adults involved in our lives. Right. I don't think anyone didn't notice looking back.
Well, but do you see, because we'll kind of dissect as we go and then let flow happen as well. Do you see where you were in your life? Your parents were newly divorced. I don't know you at all. This is the first time we've ever spoke.
Yep.
Your mom was probably going through a lot with a new divorce and three young kids.
Yeah.
And here comes Bruce Lee. he's on the scene just out in the front yard trying to attract kids. Like, that's how it is. So looking for the vulnerable, people whose parents aren't paying attention because of many different reasons.
Yeah, right?
Do you agree? Looking back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But going back to all the other victims, the nine that I know of, eight of us live with our mums. Eight of us were from divorced families. Like, that's,
That was his MO. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. Yeah.
So he gets you to go to the, how did he ask you to go to the car wash?
I can't even remember that. I honestly can't remember that interaction. I remember going to the car wash. It was just a normal thing. There was nothing weird
just
about
natural.
It.
Natural. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you must have just said, "Hey, something like going to the car wash." If you want to ask your mum, he would have asked me, because I've been that young. He would have asked me to ask my parents, like my mum, for permission to go, which she obviously said, "Yeah, no worries." So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So how was the first experience at the car wash? No, nothing.
It was one of them where you wash it yourself with the gurney and the brushes and all that. So he was teaching me how to do these sort of things. I'd never done this before. Mm-hmm. So it was teaching me.
Was he?
Just
have to ask this early on, because a lot of the behavior is very predictable, which is shocking. As a victim, and even for me as a professional, to see they don't even know each other and they do the same things. When you guys were doing the car wash and he was teaching you, where was he standing?
I can't even recall that, but I was never uncomfortable at the car wash.
I wonder if he was behind you, like kind of getting you used to him being near you and holding like the water gun thing and teaching you how to spray it. I'm guessing if I was teaching someone, I would probably be behind them so the water gun didn't go flying off.
Yeah, I can assume that's probably what happened, but I can't recall it myself. I just remember doing it.
And you weren't uncomfortable, which is important to know. No. Okay, no. So now what do you think he's thinking? First night out, no problem.
Oh, no. Yeah. Right now I know he's already planning the abuse. That's he's already planning that. He was planning it before then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think him getting permission from my mum for me to be with him and me wanting to be with him, I think he virtually thought he'd already done it. Like he was on his...
He planned it all and everything was going according to plan. Grooming. Yeah. So that's also called grooming the community.
Yeah.
Grooming the family. I know
At the time, he already had, that I know of, at least 3 victims that he was abusing. So this was practiced. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, and probably before those 3 were at least 100 or 300.
Yeah.
But you didn't know of any of them at the time.
No.
Okay. So then what happened?
It must have been just a few weeks later. He asked if I wanted to go and stay at his caravan. Stay at his caravan for the weekend.
What's a caravan? Caravan.
I don't know how you, if you, what
is
you
it call like it a in. Camper?
Like a trailer. Trailer. Oh, okay. Like a, mm-hmm. Yeah, we call them, a caravan here.
Okay.
A trailer. Like at a trailer park.
Weekend getaway kind of thing where you fish.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he stayed there on weekends by himself. He drove in and he stayed on Friday night and he left on a Sunday back to live. He lived at his parents' house. So he drove back to his parents' house on a Sunday night. So he was only in town for the weekends.
Mm-hmm. So, and what kind of work did he do again?
He was a delivery driver for car brake pads or clutch pads or I don't know, something to do with cars. So he started in the city and he drove around just delivering and picking up used materials. Mm-hmm. And then on a Friday, he ended up being 2 hours away from home. So he stayed at the caravan at the trailer park for the weekend and then would go back and start again on Monday.
Okay. Before we go further, I'm just curious, how did he meet your neighbor?
Your
neighbor who was your old. From where?
Fishing. During where the trailer was situated, it was right on the beach, and it's a spot where everybody likes to go fishing. And my neighbor and his friends used to fish up there as kids. And he must have caught up with them one day. This would have been about a year or two before I was involved with them.
Okay.
And invited them back to the caravan and into the trailer. And he used like alcohol and drugs to sort of make it
lure you.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So then he got your friend a year or two before, and then he started going to his house to get his friends. Okay,
yeah.
So he invites you to the fishing trip for the weekend.
I can remember this whole night vividly. Like we got there, it would have been 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. It was still daylight. We went fishing. Must have went fishing for about 2 hours.
And how long had you known him at this point?
I probably known him a few months, like 3 months maybe, yeah. Okay. But not well, only like, you know, because he used to pick up my next door neighbor and take him to this place. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'd see him, but he'd be at the house for a while before he left. So I'd only sort of see him before he'd go. But this weekend, he wasn't able to go. So he asked me if I wanted to go.
Okay.
So we got there. Like I said, it was about 5:30. We went fishing for a few hours, came back to the his trailer. Mm-hmm. He made tacos. We sat down, I had tacos. He then gave me beer. It was the first time I ever drank.
How are you feel? Do you remember like what you were thinking or feeling?
I was thinking it was like fun, cool. I was a bit rebellious at home.
Okay. So this is like the best. You're living your adult life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't much, it was a glass or two. And then which was, I suppose, that was a fair bit for like my first drink.
Absolutely. Yeah. And who knows? God, do you think he put anything in it or no?
No. I literally saw him. He used to buy like the long necks and open them up and pour them into glasses. So
okay.
It was, we ate dinner. We sat down and he put a movie on. We were watching a movie.
Okay.
And that went, I can't remember the movie, but it was, fun. I was sitting on a single couch in the annex. Mm-hmm. He was sitting across his 3-seater couch that he also had in there.
Okay.
The movie ended and he said he was going to put another one on, and he did, and it was a pornographic movie.
Oh, my goodness. He just went right for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had no idea that was about to happen?
No, none at all.
Gosh.
So he kept pouring drinks. I kept drinking. And then he gave me some marijuana for the first time.
Okay.
So it was just a joint. I smoked cigarettes already at that age. I started smoking cigarettes, but I never used drugs.
So let me ask you, so when you put the porn on, do you remember what your emotion was?
Fear. I was literally frozen in this beat. It was between fear and I knew this was like wrong. Everything sort of went from having, it was such a great night, everything, it was the best night I had to the worst night of my life in about 20 seconds.
That's pretty terrifying. Terrifying. Yeah. Because you knew this is getting dark. Something.
Yeah. I'd never watched pornography before. So this was like, I'd seen a few magazines, at friends' houses from their older brothers and that sort of stuff. But I'd never, this was like the first time where it was more explicit. Like this was,
full on for me. Yeah, that's super so terrifying. Do you remember? Was it adult porn?
It was. I cannot get that. I can't get it out of my head. Like I can't. Yeah, it was. European. It was. It was adults, and it was like straight porn.
Okay.
It wasn't. Yeah.
So he puts the porn on. You guys have now had a few drinks. He breaks out the weed.
Yeah. He didn't smoke. He didn't do drugs. So I smoked a joint. I didn't even finish it. I couldn't finish it. And I was really like lightheaded at this time, but I was still I didn't want to get out of this chair. I was sort of like stuck in this chair. And, he then asked how big I was, I was aroused. Obviously, I'm watching pornography. I was aroused. But he was asking me how big I was, and I was just ignoring the questions. I wasn't looking at him. I was looking straight at the TV and just sort of. Hopefully, this ends soon. It was my feeling at the time.
Very uncomfortable and scary, I would imagine.
And he kept pressuring me to he wanted to measure how big I was. He had a measuring tape with him at this point. I'm in fear at this time. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And he said that if I was over 6 inches, he'd give me $100.
Oh my goodness. And did you even know like about those, about sizes and measuring and why is this guy offering you money?
Like, in 8 inches, like we're metric over here. Oh. So I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, but I'd only just got to high school and we just use centimeters and meters. Like we don't millimeters. We don't, so he was from Australia, but I guess there's like people like now I understand the difference with like certain things are measured in inches here, especially working on cars and things like that. Like,
And measuring child penises,
but at that time I didn't know what he was talking
about. My goodness, yes, this so scary.
He told me to stand up, so I stood up, and he came over towards me, and at that point he's pulled the clothes I was wearing down. I just stood there, and there was nothing I could have done. Like,
you felt kind of helpless.
Well, I did. Like this guy, not only was he like in his 30s and I'm 13, but he was like a third degree black belt. Like this guy.
Oh, that's right. And that
he was a this guy was not, a dangerous man. Yeah,
that was not an accident.
No,
let everybody know how dangerous he was, which is dangerous in every way, is what he doesn't realize.
And
you're away from home. You can't obviously drive. You're a child.
Yeah.
And, you're stuck.
Yeah, definitely. So he's measured me. And then he let me sit back down. So I've pulled me clothes straight back up and sat back down. And then he said he didn't have the money anyway. But he said he'd give me the money next time he saw me.
Oh, my goodness.
Which he ended up doing. He did.
Really?
He did.
I'm sure you could care less about the money.
Nah.
At
this point, it was really scary.
Yes, I can imagine. You're like, who cares about money? Like, get away from me.
Then he's turned the movie off. And I swear within like 5 minutes, there was a knock at the trailer door. And in came this other kid. He was best friends with my next door neighbor, and he'd been to a party. He'd been to a party in the area, and he came just to crash at this house, at the caravan. He came just to crash there. Like, this is what he was going to do.
How far away was the caravan from where you lived, approximately, minute-wise?
Yeah, actually, there's two ways to get to it. There was like about a 10-15 minute drive and then a ferry ride.
A
half an hour drive over a bridge.
So how did your buddy get there? Your neighbor?
He would have gone into town and caught the ferry across, and he was at a party at the town where we were at. There was a beach town.
Wow. Do you think it was planned by the way they greeted each other?
No. Okay. At the time, I didn't know what was going on at all.
I mean,
at
all. Yeah. But, and I don't know if it was or wasn't, but look.
But over the years, over the years, kids would just come and go. Just come and go. Like, it sounds strange, but we became friends.
Yeah. No, it's actually not, because the grooming portion, which is the beginning portion, which in a normal relationship would be a bonding period. Yeah. That would be like the healthy version. You're bonding. And that's what the predators do. They don't know how to bond because their brains don't work that way. So a normal healthy-minded person, when you're treated with love and someone's listening and talking and spending time with you, which is what every kid wants and needs and deserves. So when some adult comes in, especially during a divorce or right after, or if you had a bad father or mother, they just come swoop you up and give you everything you need emotionally, one by one by one. And as they're doing that, it's bonding you to them.
Yeah.
And that is exactly, and it's so sad because the pain that you and other victims feel when you find out it was never real is also a huge loss. Aside from the abuse, there's so many levels to it, the pain.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're thinking like, yeah, it's not crazy.
Yeah.
He's giving you everything you need except that one thing. And you're like, if you would just stop that, everything would be perfect. Until you realize when you grow up, that's the only reason they did all those things was for that one thing.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's really messed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you see your buddy come to the door. You're like, what in the holy heck?
Yeah. Yeah. The pornography was off at that time. So it was like nothing. He didn't walk in and catch us or anything like that. And we just came in. He said he was drunk. He went into the main part of the caravan, and around the kitchen table, there was like the couches that you sit on. He just went to sleep. He just wanted a place to sleep. So he went off and slept in there. I just said, I'm tired. I need to sleep. And behind the couch, there was a single bed, and he said that I could sleep there. And he's got up and he's gone into his bed. So I've gone to my bed, and about 20 minutes later, he's turned back up to where the bed was.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and he started touching me. And he asked if anyone's ever done this to me before, if I've ever had a girlfriend who's done this, and I said no, which I hadn't. I hadn't even kissed a girl at this age, you know. I hadn't even held a girl's hand at 13, never mind what he was thinking. He then started masturbating me and ended up giving me oral sex.
Okay. And your friend is where?
Right. He's literally about 3 or 4 meters away from me asleep.
Wow.
Which the weird thing was, I was more worried about that. I was more worried. I'm like, I actually said to him, what happens if he wakes up? Like, as a way for him to sort of
care. Right. Maybe something would stop him.
Yeah. And he said that, it doesn't, it's all right. He knows what goes on, which was really, really weird for me. Like,
were you surprised?
At the time, yeah, I was. It all just came on so fast. Like,
yeah.
From the time of finishing the movie and him putting on the pornography to this friend being asleep in the next room and me being abused on the bed, it's less than an hour's gone by.
Yeah, like, and your whole life has literally turned upside down in 60 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was there any part of you during that, if you can remember, were you wondering, like, when you went to bed before he came in there, were you wondering if this is what he did to your friend?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Part of me thought, no, he didn't. I was thinking about this. Part of me thought he didn't, and the other part of me thought, well, what if he did?
Right. Like, what the heck does this? Your friend know he does this? Is he part of it? Is he doing it too? I mean, I can't even imagine your poor brain, just riddled with fear and anxiety and questions and confusion. And this is what I tell people. I don't know if you know, but I'm a therapist. I specialize in trauma. This piece right here, this whole thing from the minute we started talking to right now, aside from the physical break of and the criminal piece of it, this is actually such a painful, huge component of the abuse, is the just the ultimate betrayal when you learn that this was planned and it's not real, and
yeah.
the confusion and all of that. This is what destroys your trust for the very first time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. After he finished the oral sex, I climaxed, and he told me to do it to him.
Okay.
And I didn't want to, but he sort of kept telling me to do it. And I started, and it probably lasted about 5-10 seconds. And I just said, no, I don't like it. I don't want to do it.
Uh-huh.
So then he told me just to masturbate him until he climaxed. So I did that.
Okay.
And then he went to bed, and I went to bed.
He went to his separate room?
Yeah, he went to his separate room. He had his own bedroom inside the trailer, yeah.
Did he say anything to you when he was done?
No.
Okay. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Horrible. I was disgusted in me. I was hurt. I was scared. And I knew there was, like, this was Friday night. I knew I was at this place till Sunday. So
that's right.
You had trapped. A whole weekend. Like, I was stuck here.
And there were no cell phones at that time.
No way.
My cell goodness.
It was all payphones at that time and landlines.
Was there any part of you that thought about calling your mom or possibly living with your friend?
No, it didn't. Talking to my mom, I've never been able to talk to her about anything, really. And this in itself would be, at that point, no, there's no way.
Not even to say, like, hey, can you come get me? I'm sick.
Nothing.
It didn't even
seem like a possibility. Like, you know, I have no money. There's no way of actually contacting my mom. I was stuck there till Sunday afternoon, really.
So do you see how strategic he was?
Yeah, very. Yeah.
That in itself, the strategy, the calculatedness, and knowing you, everything you just said, he knew all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now you're going to sleep and you're like, okay, I have 2 more days of who knows what. You don't even know what's happening.
No, not at all. I woke up early. I always do. I'm up at like 6. As a child, I was a weird child. I'd be up just before the sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
Even on a weekend, I hate sleeping in. Still do to this day. I just don't like wasting the day. So I was up early. The kid who was asleep, he was still asleep. And the abuser, he woke up and he started making breakfast, which was bacon and eggs for us, that woke up the other kid. So it was, I was confident and comfortable that he wouldn't say anything. My fear was I didn't want to talk about it. I just wanted to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. And you weren't really sure. Is he going to bring it up? Like, you don't even know what this is. So are we all going to talk about this? Is he going to make fun? That's scary.
Having the other child wake up, I felt safe that he wasn't going to say anything while he was there. I don't know why. I just didn't feel like he would, and he didn't for the rest of that day. It was just a normal day. We just spent it at the beach and watching TV and fishing.
But how confusing is that? Like, we're just right back into normal. Like, what in the hell happened?
Yeah.
And then you're probably hopeful that it's over.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. As much as everything was normal, it made me feel that everything was normal. Like, it did make me feel normal. And the next night, nothing happened.
Wow. Did your friend go home?
No, he stayed. He stayed that night. So whether or not nothing happened because of that, I don't know. But
where did he sleep? In the same place?
We slept, all three slept in the same spot that second night.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So then day three, do you remember?
It was another normal day. Nothing happened. At the end, it was like he owned a ute and like a utility, like I don't know how what they class in America. But so it was only three, it was only two seater really at the front, but it was a bench. It was a bench seat. So it couldn't have been a three seater because it was a manual transmission. But we, three of us, got into the ute and he dropped.
Oh, like a pickup truck?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I know what you're talking
about. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the three of us got into that and we were driving home and he dropped us off and it was like absolutely nothing happened. So the next weekend I just didn't go over. I stayed right away from the neighbor. I sort of just hid. I stayed at home. I stayed inside.
Was he there?
Yeah. And the other kids that were there went with him to the caravan park that night.
Were you thinking about what was going to happen?
Oh, no, to be honest, I didn't care. I was just scared for me.
You were safe. Yeah, you're like, I'm good. He's out of my way. Okay.
So later in that week, where I lived, right across the road was a cricket and baseball oval, just for local kids and that local comps. And I was across there, would have been kicking a football, doing something like that. And there were these kids that I knew from the kid next door and a couple of, there was him, my next door neighbor and his friend, who was the one who stayed at the caravan the week I was there. Uh-huh. And another kid who lived in the same street, who was also a year above me, all came over to talk to me in the oval. And we were just sitting down in the grass and just talking about, school and everything. And one of them turned around and said, I know what, the guy's name was Pete, and he said, I know what Pete did to you.
Oh.
And
just out of nowhere he says that?
It was he was older. He might have been even a year older than the other two. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But this was my next door neighbor, the kid who was at the caravan with me, and another one. So there was the four of us sitting around, and one of them just said straight, it just came out of his mouth. He goes, I know what Pete done with you. And I was terrified, absolutely terrified.
Because he only said it to you?
Well, he said it to me, but in front of everybody.
So that's what I mean. He didn't direct it at anybody.
No, he said John. He was telling me. And then they started telling me that it had been happening to them and it had been happening to them for a couple of years now.
Wow. So this is another twist, because right now, you're probably embarrassed, scared. Yeah. And then he comes out with, he's done it to all of us. Then it's like your heart goes another 15 feet down.
Yeah, it did. But at the same time, they normalized it.
Huh.
Not like they were trying to set me up as his next prey, but more of the, I understand from later on in this story, I virtually do the same thing. I end up, because he kept insisting that I invite more friends over to the caravan, I sort of think if I do that, it'll stop, but it doesn't. It's sort of like
hang on one second. It cut out. You feel like it did what?
I feel like that if I invited friends over, it would stop for me. Like it would stop. He wouldn't do it if there was a bunch of us there.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And the way they were talking about it, these other three, they were just normalizing it for themselves. They were,
well, and it's probably what he told them too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it made, I know from later on that it made them, it would have made them feeling like what was happening to them wasn't as bad as they thought it would have been, if that makes sense. Like they were,
no, it makes perfect sense. It's just, yeah. But I'm guessing he trained them to think that way.
Oh, definitely. Because, yeah.
Yeah. That this is normal and this is what guys do and so on and so on. Now inside, your intuition, whether you know these things, even 2-year-olds feel afraid.
Yeah.
3-year-olds feel fear of this. So you can't articulate it. And then you have someone telling you who's an adult, who's such a cool guy and fun. And so you're like, he must be telling me the truth. But inside, it feels every bit of wrong and you feel horrible.
Yeah.
You're trying to like make all this make sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what were you, were you buying into what they were saying?
I felt not as bad. Like,
okay,
it made me feel like I wasn't, what's the word? Like, I no longer felt like I was so wrong. Like, because I blamed myself. I blamed me for what was happening. And so having me 3 other people who were a little bit older than me, you know, we're only talking months, you know, they're only months older than me. They made it feel like that actually, if this is normal, then I can stop feeling bad about myself.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost a relief.
Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah. Yeah. And then the guy who was abusing me, he started going to me mum and asking, oh, can John come and stay the weekend? Can John come stay the weekend? And it ended up happening, like I was there virtually every weekend as of then.
Wow.
Until I was from the age of 13 till I was halfway, 15 and a half, close to 16.
Wow. Yeah.
So,
and so he had your mom. Obviously,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know your mom, but
yeah,
you know, if your mom cared about your safety, she must have somehow or another, he had her feeling safe enough
to
take you for the weekends.
Yeah, and to this day, I don't understand why. Like, I don't.
Have you ever asked her?
Nah, she knows about it. I ended up telling her about it. But not until years later.
Okay. And we can get to that. Okay. So now you're spending every weekend with this guy. Are you feeling any sense of getting closer as time is going on?
The abuse happened virtually every Friday, every Saturday night from then on. So that,
And then would he call you during the week too, or was what was the contact
nothing. Like we wouldn't hear from him. We'd get dropped off at about 6 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday, and we wouldn't hear from him till about 4 o'clock after we got home from school. About an hour after we got home from school, he'd be ready to pick us up.
Who's us? You got more than one of you?
It could be me or any of the other kids that there was, like, at that time there was 3 that I knew of that were there most of the time as well, coming and going. They're a little bit old, like they were only a year older than me, but they were more not mature, but they were more rebellious in a way. They were sneaking off and going to parties and doing all this sort of stuff where I wasn't doing that. Like, that wasn't my scene at that age.
And so when he would have you guys, when there were more than one of you together with him on the weekend, was the feeling more like a party of friends? Or
yeah,
was
definitely.
It like, this is my boyfriend and we're hanging out with our friends? Or were you afraid? Like, where
there was
were
no,
you?
It was really strange. It was never like a boyfriend. That sort of thing wasn't a thing. In fact, the strangest thing that I learned at that age was this man absolutely hated homosexuals. Hated them.
Right.
He would class himself as a straight male.
Wow.
He ended up years later being engaged to a woman, but he just liked young boys at the same time. But it was never a relationship.
Are you aware there's a name for what he was? It sounds like he liked like prepubescent boys right around that age.
Yeah, it was
12,
he was
13, 14, 15,
yeah,
right in there.
Yeah. Once mm-hmm. we all hit around, well, I left by the time, but once the kids hit like that 16 years old and they sort of became young men,
mm-hmm.
He lost interest in them.
Mm-hmm. So did you know there's a name for that specific type of pedophile?
Yeah, I can't recall what it is.
It's called a pederast.
Ah, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have heard that term.
Yeah, which is crazy that so many people, you know, the only way anything gets a name is when there's so many people that are interested or have something like that. Yeah, that's the really disturbing piece of it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And before that, there's no interest. And after that, there's no interest. Yeah. And that also is, and you may have gone through that, is very, very painful for the victims because they're treated, you know, a certain way they get used to. And then all of a sudden they're dropped like a hot potato.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Well,
and the kid's heartbroken and confused and victimized on every level. And the guy is off to his next 300 victims.
Yeah. Well, this happened. This must have happened for about a year. It was me and these older boys.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing would ever happen, as in, like, if it happened, it was between me and him. And if things ever happened between him and the other boys, which I knew it did because they would tell me about it,
mm-hmm.
it was never in front of each other with us.
So when they would tell you, when you guys would talk about it, would you talk
about
it
talk
in
about
what
it
kind of
school.
Way?
I look at it now as just a way of getting it out. Like, it was like we'd meet over in the Oval and we'd just chat and we'd talk about what he'd done to each of us.
So more of a way of, like you just said, like getting it out. It wasn't like bragging. It wasn't crying.
No, it wasn't. Just... I honestly feel it was a way of making sure that each one of us wasn't going through this alone, that it was happening to each and every one of us.
Yeah.
There's some comfort in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
And nobody told their parents.
No. Now, this continued for about a year. And then the other three, what's that, sorry?
John?
You're cutting out.
Yeah, sorry. I got a call even though I shut it off.
Yes.
Sorry about that. I couldn't hear you because it cut me off.
Okay. Yeah, so this went on for about a year. Every weekend I'd be there and I'd be abused every weekend. I'd probably fall asleep straight away afterwards and he'd go off to the next person. And I'm assuming that's what would happen. Like, the abuse could come at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. You could be fast asleep and he'd wake up with him touching you.
Oh my God.
So yeah. I'm assuming that he's probably already been through at least one person, one of the kids that were, whoever else was there, you know, you could sort of tell by what time it was, if you were first in line or last in a weird way.
Yeah, well, you learn your environment, and I will guarantee you that you, as a grown man, have a, people who've been abused, kids who've been abused, have the most intense sixth sense and intuition above somebody who has never been abused, because like you just said, there's no word, nothing happened. You learn to read a room and read eyelashes is what I call it. Like nothing is really, anybody else would be like, what are you talking about? But your intuition is so keen and so hypersensitive, because once you've been victimized, now you have to know what's going on around you. So your brain will just perk up to everything and notice everything. Yeah. And that stays with you, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly. No, it really does. Yeah. Always. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always on that alert. Even to this day.
Yeah, it doesn't leave. No. I mean, and it can, depending what your job is, it can make you excellent at your job. And it could also destroy you at your job, depending what you do. Okay, so you guys are there for you, the kids, you, the three or four of you are there for each other in this very unique way, which I would call a trauma bond, because now you guys are bonded, because only nobody knows except you guys, and he doesn't know that you guys know that each other knows. So you are all bonded on something very, very secretive.
Yeah, but these people, they're not my school friends. Like at the same time I'm going to school, they're a year above me. So I don't, you know, we don't even say hello to each other when we see each other in the corridors. I've got my own friends. They have their own friends.
And they're your neighbors though, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, one of them was my next door neighbor, and the rest were, one lived right at the other end of the street, and the other one just lived in the area. They were friends, them three.
So you see, as a young man, a young boy, man, you know, you're turning 12, 13, 14, 15. There's so much change developmentally going on, and he is literally polluting and intruding on your development. And these things, because they're during that poignant part of your development, they are with you. And I know you know that. They're with you. And you, what you learned from all of that, I'm not sure what you did with it, but what you learned is how to compartmentalize.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yep. When you're home, you're this person. And these, and when you're at school, you and those guys don't talk at all. So that's weird. But you learn that's how it is. And then when you guys are together with him, I'm sure it's also very different.
Yeah.
And then when you're together, alone together, then you can all talk about the trauma. So your brain has learned how to separate out, like I think that I just named five things that are very, very strong things. So you've learned right there, your brain has completely different compartments that do not link to each other.
Exactly.
So are you good at compartmentalizing still?
I think I do. I think I don't like doing it.
It's just nature though, for you probably.
It's ingrained. It's just what I do. Yeah.
Okay. So so the years go by. This is every weekend.
Yep. After that first year, the other three, they all started getting girlfriends. And they just one at a time sort of dropped off.
And how did he handle that in any way that you knew of?
He was fine. He didn't care. He'd see him every now and then. Even like years later, they would every now and then drop in, and you know, just have a beer or whatever and leave. But like the abuse would sort of by that time they've hit that 15-ish, 16-ish, and he's like. They've got their own girlfriends. They're no longer spending time with him. But he was okay with it. Well, when I say okay, he wasn't like distressed that he'd get caught or anything like that. But he did start putting pressure on me to invite other of my friends to come over to the come over for the weekends, which I did didn't do for a while. For a while, I just kept saying, no, they're busy. They don't want to come over. And
did you know that's what he wanted?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I could tell then he was like looking for replacements.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a weekend coming up where I wasn't going to spend it with him. I was spending it with my friends, mm-hmm. with two of my friends, and we're going to go fishing. He knew this. He knew I wasn't coming. He knew that the next weekend I wouldn't be there, that I'm going fishing with these two friends. He knew where I was going fishing. He knew what time I was going fishing. In that week I got in trouble at school and my mum grounded me. So I wasn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. My two friends went fishing. And I didn't know anything, what was going on. And Monday when I got back to school, they pulled me up at lunchtime and told me that they met him. He was walking where everyone was fishing and he introduced himself to them and started talking.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he said, do you know John? And they were like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm Pete. I'm the guy that he comes and stays with on the weekends. You know, I've got a caravan park. You drink. We do drugs.
Oh, my gosh. What a psychopath. He literally went there.
And they ended up going back to the caravan park with him. And they told me on that Monday that they both got abused that weekend by him.
Wow.
He did the same thing. He performed oral sex on both of them after showing them, getting them drunk, getting them high, showing them pornography. He did the exact same thing, but he did that. He never met these two. He met them and within half an hour, they were packing up their fishing gear and going back to his place.
Isn't that insane? How did you feel?
Guilty. To this day, it's the one thing that I honestly hate about myself.
Why? I mean,
because
does your other part of your brain recognize you could never out?
I know. I don't worry. I know there is nothing I could have done to stop.
Nope. He had a plan.
I still can't help.
Hello.
Feeling that guilt. But
well, I really hope that one day you can let go of that, because this is the problem. You know, these are seasoned predators, and the predatory behavior started probably when he was young. I'm guessing since you guys were around 12, 13, 14, guessing, you know, people are not going to like hearing this, but I've worked with enough sex offenders to see the patterns that I can almost promise you he was sexually abused at that same age.
Yeah. He told me, I can't remember when, he did tell me that the same, what he was doing to us happened to him.
Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's just kind of crazy how it works like that, because you would think, okay, this happened to me, I'm never going to do that to anybody.
Yeah, but that's the one thing that drives me crazy. I don't understand when somebody says that the reason they abuse is because they were abused themselves. And like, I couldn't imagine putting torment or hurt on anyone the way that it was put on me. Like, I can't understand that reasoning.
No, and I mean, and that's what I want to explain to you from your first email to me, is what you just said right there, that is the dividing difference. You view it as pain and harm and devastation.
Yeah, right? It's a destruction of a life, really.
Yeah. I wrote a book called Emotional Homicide. And when I worked with the sex offenders, that's what I used to tell them. You guys murdered their mind. It's a murder of the mind.
Yeah.
And what I want to share with you is that is the explicit difference of you and a predator. because you view it as those negative things we just said. A predator, a lot of them don't view it as that. Not everyone, because we can't lump, I would like to lump everyone, but I know it's not fair.
Yep.
But a lot of predators, especially child predators, they don't think they're harming anyone. They think that the kids love it. And you cannot tell them any different. Believe me, I try. And they just think the kid's smiling. He keeps coming back. And, or she, whatever, you know, she keeps coming back to sit on my lap. She still wants to go have ice cream with me. She knows every time we have ice cream, you know, or which, and that's how, but their brain is, you know, what we call in sex offender treatment, their thinking errors, AKA delusions. They're delusional. They, in their mind, they have sorted it out that this child must like it. And I am happy to tell them in treatment that that is, they did like you. They don't want your penis and they don't want you to touch them, but they do like you. And if you would stop that, it would be considered a genuine love, but because you're only doing those things so that you can harm them, that's the whole thing is ruined. But that's the difference of a predator. They think that it's a good for them, or they're teaching them, or they're loving them, or giving them things that their parents aren't, and they're helping. I mean, the distortions are absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And then there's some that just don't care. They don't care, and they want to hurt kids, genuinely want to hurt them. And they're, you know, there's different types of predators, but they don't see it that way. And, you know, and it goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Okay. So did the abuse escalate from?
Yeah, it did. Within the first few months, I continued going over to his place on the weekend, and so did my two friends. And it was happening then every night the same. But it got to the point where he was having us do things to each other.
He started involving people together.
Yeah, so it wasn't just like one-on-one at that point. It might not have been all of us together, but it was brought out, which this never happened beforehand with these other kids with me. Anyway, whatever happened to them, I don't know. But because we weren't sort of close friends like this new group were my friends, it escalated in that sense. It also escalated. He tried on more than one occasions to penetrate me. And I didn't like it. I hated it. I absolutely hated it, like I was 14. And
did he stop when you told him to?
He did. Every time I asked him, he did it about 3 or 4 occasions all up. And every time I told him to stop, he stopped. There was no like force. There was no consent. Not that we could give consent as we were children,
right?
But if anything ever went too far, we said no. He sort of backed off.
Feel confusing to you?
What was that?
That's okay. I said, did that feel confusing to you?
That
you could say no and he would stop, and you're like, then why are you doing all this stuff?
Like it would have been awesome, like if he just said stop doing it all. Everything else he did with us was amazing. I what I find hard to do today is some of my best memories in my childhood was with this monster.
Some of
the best times I ever had was with him.
Mm-hmm.
But all of my worst times was with him as well. So it's that.
Very confusing. Yeah, it's extremely confusing, which doesn't really lay a good groundwork for finding a healthy love in your life,
you know,
and I'm not laughing in like a joyful, giddy way. It's just like, I think you know, it's just a dark humor. It's like, how is anyone supposed to create or find some healthy love when that's your first experience with your first sexual experience was abuse, your first introduction to having a relationship, it sounds like, with a male figure that was positive was also the abuser. And just surrounded by secrets and lies, not you, but you had to be a part of it. So this also is a breeding ground for secrets. And you're right. I have to ask you, because this is kind of like my sore spot where I start to lose my professionalism sometimes. Because just like you said, like, hello, parents. Why isn't anyone weirded out that this 30-year-old wants to hang out with 12-year-olds every weekend?
Yeah, that's and there were signs too. Like this is, and it's not just me, mum. I think in my high school, I went into year seven almost a straight A student, and halfway through year 10, I'm getting asked to leave. I'm a drug addict and I'm abusing. You know, I'm not going to school anymore. I've just stopped. Like, I go from a top grade student to being suspended 10 times a year. And
And people chalk it up to being a rebellious teenager instead of looking into it.
No one asked. No one asked why. I was never, ever asked, why are you misbehaving? I was just always punished. And the same at home. I started being really, really bad at home.
Do you think if someone would have, I mean, not if someone said, hey, is someone sexually abusing you? But if someone said, like, hey, John, like, is everything okay at home?
Yeah, I 100, maybe not my mum, because I might not have been able to. But I was close with a lot of the school teachers. And, you know, I honestly believe that I was, the way I was behaving was like screaming at them to.
Yes, I agree.
Just ask me why. I'll tell you. Like, I'll be happy to tell you. Just ask me why. But it just happened.
And your mom didn't know. I mean, I'm sure she noticed that you went from straight A to this far down. Did she ever talk with you? Like, hey,
she blamed my friends.
She thought they were a bad influence.
Always in a bad crowd. And I'm the first to admit, if anyone, I was the bad one in the group. Like, I was the one.
Actually, the bad one in the group was the evil Peter.
Yeah, no, that's right. But I mean, even if we're in a group of friends, if one of us was to decide, hey, let's not go to school today, that would be me. It were my friends. Like, my friends weren't that. They were a lot more centered than I was. I used to act up a lot more, but because of the abuse. But it surely wasn't my friend's fault, because I was getting in trouble at school.
Right. So many parents do this. And it literally infuriates me, is they blame the friends. Let's just say it is the friends. It's not. It's your kid. Your kid's responsible. Everyone's responsible for their own behavior. And I think a lot of parents, I mean, I'm a mom, and I was a single mom. Parents, but I wasn't that mom, because I've been hypersensitive to that whole thing. Where you want to, I think a lot of parents believe if their kid is acting out, that it could possibly mean that they're not a good mom. Yeah. So let's blame everybody else instead of saying, like, what do I need to do to help my child and bring it into the relationship between you and your child to make it better? And so they look at these things that are insignificant and irrelevant. And even if the kids are garbage they're hanging around with, first of all, it's not really a garbage kid, in my opinion. Like, something's always going on. Kids aren't garbage. That's adults are garbage. And what is happening to this child that they're behaving like that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, every blue moon, you know, podcasts are hard. Anything you do to the public is hard because there's always a 1%, you know, or a 5%. But overall speaking, if a child is acting out, something's wrong. I'm not saying it's abuse. It could be, but definitely something is not right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So your mom has no clue what's going on. She's not finding it concerning that this complete stranger from across the street wants to just spend every weekend with children.
Nah. And by the time I hit that 15-year-old mark, if I came home, I was already in that much trouble at home and at school that if I came home on a Friday after school, my mum would ask why I'm there and pretty much tell me to go away and come back Sunday. So, point in the relationship with her. Where I wouldn't come home from school on a Friday. I'd finish school on a Friday. I'd leave for school Friday morning and the next time I'd see my mum would be Sunday afternoon. That's the point that our relationship got to.
So tell me if you don't mind. Yeah, that's very, very sad. I don't want to skip over that. It's very sad. And, you know, in your mom's defense and single parents' defense, divorced kids, she's trying to keep it together, probably trying financially to now pick up stuff that she maybe didn't have before. So she has so many new stresses. And it's not saying it's okay, but just trying to look at the big picture.
Oh, yeah.
And this is what these predators do. That's exactly, they smell it. They watch. They know exactly who to go for.
Yeah.
Because they know that poor mom is trying to keep it together and then they just act like they're prince, you know, helpful. Yeah. And the mom is happy that there's a male figure. Oh, you're the first male figure. Well, any male figure that just wants to hang out with a teenager or a prepubescent child that's not that common.
Yeah.
For no reason.
I end up picking up a drug habit. So I was stealing from him. I was stealing from him.
What drugs did he have you doing? Did he ever bring it past weed?
Nah, it was just weed at that point in my life with him. Yeah. Uh-huh. All he ever used. That's all. I started using weed when I was 23. And since the ages of 18 to 33. I was a dealer and a user, and I've been clean of all drugs since 2013.
Wow, good for you.
Twenty years, and I always think he made me a drug addict and gave me he gave me the drugs, but he also gave me a reason to keep using them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible what one human being can do to an entire life, sometimes an entire life. And it can be positive how great one human being can be in your life. And then it can be the absolute opposite as well. It's usually not the same person.
Yeah.
But in these cases of abuse, it is the same person. And then you start finding relationships that look like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's terrible. Yeah. Do you, what would you say was, if you're open to it, I don't want to ask you anything that would be uncomfortable, but what would you say? Okay. Was like of all the times, the scariest for you?
Just the first time, definitely the first. That first time, that was virtually the only time I felt fear. Afterwards, because I knew it was happening to other ones, it felt normal. Uh-huh. It felt good.
Like, yeah.
It felt nice. I wasn't doing it because it hurt. It did feel nice. It was wrong, but it felt nice. So it wasn't something that I hated because I was brainwashed to think that it was normal. This is what you do.
Yeah. And what would he say to you? Because, well, let me just tell you something before we go to the next thing. Are you aware? Have you been to therapy for this?
A little bit. Yeah.
So there's something called, there's a name for that too. There's a name for a lot of these things because they are so common. So when it's a sexual assault and abuse that doesn't include violence and that physically to the touch, because human beings respond to touch. And so even if it's abuse, and it's still this physical touch sometimes feels good. And so there's a name for it, and it's sexual guilt that's part of the abuse. So you feel bad because, okay, I got an erection, and okay, I wanted to do more, and I liked the way this felt, and then you feel bad for it. But it's normal, because as human beings, it's normal to respond to a pleasant human touch.
Yeah.
And they, the predators, are exploiting that, and they know that. They know everything they're doing. Do you think that he would try that on a 35-year-old man? Mm. No. Because why?
They know aside better. Yeah.
He's not attracted to an adult, first of all. And secondly, he could never go toe-to-toe with a 35-year-old.
Yeah.
But there's no, you know, a 12-year-old. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course he's going to, you know, slaughter them in every way, and they trust him and look up to him and confuse, you know, the confusion of all the good times. And then there's this, I used to do this thing in group. So I've done a few different things with sex offenders in my career, a few different jobs. One of them, I did sex offender treatment. So it was ordered by the court, which means they have to go. And if they don't go, they go back to prison. So they are on parole. They've already done their prison time. Now they're on parole and they have to come to treatment. I can't remember if it's once or twice a week. I think it's, I don't remember. I think it's twice a week, maybe even three. So one time I did a group, and these guys, you know, now, so I'm the only non-offender in the group. I'm the minority. And they're all offenders, and most of them were child offenders. And they would say, like, well, she liked it. And I would say, well, how would you know that? Like, what signs were given? Well, because, you know, because she asked me to feed her. And you're just sitting there like, what? Because she's hungry, and that's your job. But in their mind, the fact that she even came to them, and they would say, some of them would say, I was a really good dad, except for that. Or I was a great uncle. I only worked with the guys in this position. I was a really good uncle, or I was a great neighbor, or I was a great priest, or whatever, except for that. So I kept hearing that, and it was just not okay. So one day I brought in a glass of water and some food coloring. You know what that is, right?
Yep.
Food coloring. Yeah. So I took the glass. I took the food color. I'm asking you that because I don't think you're smart, because I don't know what you have in your country, what we have in ours. So I took the food coloring and I said, okay, so I pour the glass of water. So, right, it's clear. It's pure. So here's your relationship with your, if it's a family abuser or a neighbor, someone you know. Okay, so here's this relationship you build. It's pure. The very first time that you break the boundary, I put one drop, just one drop of food coloring, any color, and you could watch it permeate through the entire glass slowly but surely until it changed colors.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
Yeah.
So you can't be good except for that. Once you do that one thing, you have permeated and polluted and destroyed the purity. It's gone.
Yeah.
So it's very confusing. And that's just, I think, the biggest word. And that is the essence of abuse, confusion, fear, confusion, anxiety. And then comes, as you get older, guilt and shame for the parts of it that you enjoyed. And you're not wrong for enjoying a physical touch from someone that you thought cared about you.
Yeah.
He's wrong because he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah, I could see how the first time would be the scariest because this is, you don't even know this exists.
Yeah, well, there was a few times when he'd also, he'd make threats virtually without threatening us. But he sort of made sure that we never told any. I can't even remember how he'd done it, but I can just recall him making threats without threatening us to never go to the police or never tell our parents or that he'd come after us type of thing. And we knew the guy, you know.
Oh, yeah, the black belt, right. What would he say? Like,
we just said nothing.
In what? Like,
it was weird because at that point in our lives, we were not thinking of that. It wasn't even we weren't having a discussion. Do we go to the police about this? Like, that wasn't even part of the thoughts never even entered our minds at that age. It wasn't something we were looking at doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't really know what your options are legally at 12.
At the same time, it was the way we were feeling, the way you were just talking about it, was like, why would we want, we didn't even want it to stop. It became, right. So after years, it became normal. Like,
well, doesn't it make sense? You can get conditioned to.
Yeah.
You know, just like military people, you know, when they go into basic training, it's brutal and they want to go home and they hate it. And some of them within time make it a, you know, 20, 30 year career.
Yeah.
And some of them scramble to get out ASAP, if not earlier. Yeah. You can, the human brain can condition. But not only that, you know, you have to remember this guy was providing, even though it was under a false pretense, he was providing you, I don't know your friend's situations, he was providing you with things that you didn't have. And that is that's the core root of grooming, is to find the holes and fill them.
Yeah, that was the same with all of them too. That was
same. And him flexing, you know that word, you know, black belt. I just can't say that enough. That was not an accident.
Yeah, no, exactly right.
Out in the front yard, like, really, go in your garage, buddy. Like, you know, why do you want everyone to see that? Because he wants people to fear him.
Yeah.
And he wants people to envy and look up to him also. So he is filling a dual role. But most adults would see that and be like, what a weirdo. Like, what is this guy doing with a bunch of 12-year-olds? I mean, nobody noticed. That is mind-blowing.
I know, yeah. And it was literally in the front yard. Like, and where the caravan was, where we stayed, you know, there were people all around us. Like, For years, the people around us, the people that owned the caravan, saw different boys come and go. And as soon as they hit a certain age, they stopped coming and the younger ones started again.
Yeah, and nobody said anything. I mean, there's no way that of all those people that nobody thought that was odd and stepped in.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right, yeah. Because it was very, very odd. Like, looking back, it was very odd, like,
it's very upsetting. It's really makes me so angry because somebody could have, so all those people could have stopped it somehow.
Yeah.
One person causing a ruckus, doing a little, you know, digging a little bit could have, I don't know if they would have, he would have found other victims guaranteed.
Well, that's right. Like they would have seen the alcohol brought into the place. They would have smelt the weed. It's a little caravan full of kids and weed smoke billowing out of the vent.
Right.
Like, how do you not?
Even just on that alone, why isn't there concern? It's very, the society minding their own business is not okay.
This was for me like 93 to 95.
Okay.
So that's the time, like, the time frame of that for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then how did you get away from him?
I ended up getting kicked out of home and school.
Okay.
And I was living on the streets at that time for about 2 months.
Okay.
I slept in sand dunes, grandstands at football ovals.
Where was he?
Doing his normal thing. I just stayed away. I broke free. Once I got kicked out of home, I never went back.
Really?
Yeah. I think he didn't want me to come back. I'm not 100% sure, but after a few months of being in living on the streets, I got put into a youth refuge for a couple of weeks, and then I got put into, at the age of, I just turned 16, and I got put into a boarding house which had about 20 people living in it, and most of them just got out of prison. I was placed in a place. I was still 15, actually. I wasn't even 16. I got put into a place where, like, I was with criminals. To be fair, everybody there looked out for me. I was never involved. I was never brought into any type of. They sort of realized there was a few of us there, a few kids there, but we were sort of looked after. We were really actually pretty looked after pretty well.
Yeah, they were protective. They'd
buy us food if we were hungry. They'd make sure we had food.
That's very nice.
They never involved us in their stuff, so that was actually pretty good. But that point, he knew where I was staying,
and
he didn't want me to be. He didn't want me to be involved with him anymore. Even my friends were too scared to come and see me because of where I was living at that point. So
you know all that, why? What do you think? Why he didn't want to see you?
Oh, he knew he probably assumed that I would have told these people.
They would have known that you wouldn't. Well, he knew you weren't going to tell. They would have known.
I've never actually thought of that.
Yeah, he would have got killed.
Yeah, yeah.
They would have known. As soon as he pulled up, he would have been done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I know that there had to have been relief and a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Because your mom kicks you out. This guy, what feels like, kicked you out.
Yeah.
And now you're on your own.
Yeah, yeah, and I just want to say, with my mum, she's apologized after she found out what had happened. She's apologized for kicking me out, and I'm like,
I'm sure
that's the one thing she didn't need to apologize. I understand how violent I was
angry.
Yeah, I was never violent to her or to my sisters, but I was just violent.
Yeah, there's anger.
So I've never blamed her for kicking me out, even at that age. Even when she did it, I could see it was coming. So,
can I ask you if you've ever thought of her kicking you out was of such a blessing?
It really was. It virtually stop the abuse that day.
Yes, and that was it. And he's such a little scumball. Like people, I get emails from offenders who say that I'm too hostile towards offenders. And I am hostile towards anyone harming children. And hostile is kind of an understatement. Like, I can be objective and do my work, but my real heart, I don't agree with ever harming a child, ever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I promise you that your mom doesn't even know, and she doesn't know this, but you know this, and you going away was the best thing that happened to you. You going to those criminals, because, I mean, people can make a decision every day that can make you a criminal, and people commit crimes every day that don't get caught, bouncing checks, driving drunk. it's not all full-fledged murderers and rapists in there. There's a million different crimes. But of all the people that were in your life, who looked out for you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah,
they did. Yeah. And if you ever want to find loyalty, you know, to a degree, of course, these were the guys who actually looked out for you. They literally made sure you ate and didn't ask you for a sexual favor rape you or make you steal for them. Yep.
They didn't ask for anything at all. Like, it was just out of their goodness, you know?
Yeah,
just,
because they've probably been there. Yeah. They've been there and they relate. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, criminals are the way to go, but tons of people commit crimes. And that doesn't mean you're a bad human being breaking a law. It doesn't mean you're good either. But looking out for a kid, God, I just, that's kind of like my, I'm going to have to absorb that, the way that unfolded for you, that your behavior got so bad that she kicked you out. And then that's actually what ended up saving you.
Yeah. And not long after that, about a year after that, I left the state. Me and a friend, who was a few years older than me, we just left the state. I didn't tell my mum, didn't tell anyone. We just packed up and left.
I don't blame you. I mean, I'm sure you're not feeling a lot of love from anyone based on what you've been through at that point.
I started associating around gangs and stuff like that because the boarding house I was living in got a petrol bomb thrown through and it burned down. So I then had nowhere to live. So I started getting involved in gangs and it just got bad. Everything started getting bad again. So I left. I just left the state. I just wanted a fresh start. I wanted to start fresh, be just a normal person again.
Yeah. How did you end up telling your mom?
I was walking home one night. I had baseball training in Geelong, another city that I moved to, and this is when I moved into state. My sisters tracked me down through the electoral roll. By the time I heard from my sisters and my mum, I'd already had two children myself. I was like 20. 21 by the time I heard from my mum again.
When you were 21, you already had two kids?
Yeah. I had my first child when I was 18 and 20. Okay. I had my second. And, I started walking home from baseball training because it was only a few Ks, so I didn't drive. And I just started thinking about it and I started crying. And I just rang her just to let her know. I didn't go into details, but I just said, that's why I was mucking up. That's the reason. The person who I was staying with at the caravan park, he was the one, he was molesting me for years.
Wow. What was her response like?
She sort of went silent. She didn't know what to say. She apologized. She said sorry. She asked if there was anything I could do.
I mean, was she shocked? Was she like not surprised?
I think so. I'm sure she was shocked. She had to have I think when I told her, she must have been running through my early childhood through her mind and sort of putting everything back together. I think she then realized the reason why everything turned out the way it did and realized it was because of that.
Yeah.
But she'd never saw it coming. That's for sure. She had no idea. Like, I know that. She never saw that.
Well, if you're open to this idea, I would love to do like another chat with you to talk about like kind of this part that we just did, which I really sincerely appreciate you reaching out to me. I appreciate you sharing this with me and sharing your story with the people. One, I think it's powerful for anyone who's been abused to come forward. Like, the courage it takes is pretty incredible. And then I think you coming forward as a male who's been abused by another male, it's just helping, everything you're doing is helping other people who've been through it know that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay. But I would love to have a whole separate next one about what your thoughts are on grooming, on for parents, like you, all the things you were definitely. Saying. And like, if you're a kid and you're in that situation, what you would suggest, would you, because I don't want to blend it where anybody falls out because it's too long.
Yeah.
Because it's very, everything we've talked about is so important. And if we, would you be okay with, open to that?
I'm happy to do that.
Okay. Awesome. So I'm going to shut off this recording and then you and I can finish talking. So
no worries.
We will say goodbye to the recording.
No worries.
Goodbye, friends. Hang on.